Welcome to the Journey of Innovation for Mental Health and Cancer Care in the UK podcast series. Produced by the International Hospital Federation, this three-part podcast series from the Department for Business and Trade will showcase the best of British innovation in our UK NHS services in the run-up to IHF's World Hospital Congress in Lisbon in October. The Healthcare UK team, part of the Department for Business and Trade, works jointly with the Department for Health and Social Care and NHS England to empower UK healthcare providers to do business overseas. This first episode will give an overview of the ecosystem of NHS innovation. We'll explain how the NHS designs, evaluates, and regulates innovations, how research can be translated into practice, and how our UK entrepreneurs are working with the NHS with their innovations and can share these globally. And to host this episode, we have Chris Bourne, NHS Innovation and Clinical Services Specialist at Healthcare UK.
Thank you very much, Eleanor. That's a great introduction. Thank you, everyone who's listening to this. I hope you'll find it a useful three-part series podcast. We are talking about innovation in the National Health Service in the UK. So I'm Chris Bourne. I work for Healthcare UK. I'm an NHS chief executive that's had 25 years experience in healthcare in the NHS and National Health Service. And I've been working for the last 10 years or so supporting the NHS and healthcare industry in the UK to export to various markets across the world. My role currently is very focused on the NHS and how we can identify innovation to offer to other parts of healthcare systems in other parts of the world. I'm hoping we can talk about the overall system of innovation that we have in the NHS today and looking at how we design innovation, how we evaluate it, how we regulate it, and how research can be translated into practice and how we generate entrepreneurial spirit amongst our clinicians and other colleagues in the NHS to generate new ideas and bring them into benefit for patients. I'm very pleased indeed to welcome our speakers, guest speakers today. We have an example of an innovation system within a hospital setting. We have an example of an innovation across a wider area, across a partnership, across one city. And we also have a countrywide innovation on our podcast today. So I'm very pleased to be able to introduce the speakers, and I'm going to ask them, in fact, to introduce themselves. So Chris Chaney, would you like to start?
Hi, Chris. Thank you very much for having me on. I'm Chris Chaney. I'm the chief executive of CW Plus, which is the charity arm, the Chelsea and Westminster Hospital NHS Foundation Trust based in London. I also sit on the board of the Hospital Trust and I'm one of the co-leads for innovation in the organization.
Thank you, Chris. Kristen Ann, can we ask you?
Hello, my name is Kristen Ann Rutter. I am a doctor by training, but I'm currently leading Cambridge University Health Partners, which, as you said, brings together all the different players in the health and research and innovation landscape in the Cambridge ecosystem. So across hospitals and universities, investors, etc.
Thank you, Kristen Ann. And we have another Chris. Chris Wright.
Hi, it's lovely to be here. So I'm Chris Wright. I'm currently a national advisor for the Scottish Government around digital mental health, and I also lead the national programme. And I've got about 20 years experience of implementing innovations within NHS setting.
Well, it's great to have you all. Thank you for coming to this podcast. So let's start off by looking at the overall innovation landscape here in the National Health Service in the UK. Chris Chaney, I wonder if I could ask you to start off by describing your view of innovation, the innovation landscape. Indeed, why do we need innovation in the NHS?
Well, it's a big question for a short podcast, but I'll give it a go. So I think the innovation landscape in the UK at the moment and across the NHS is pretty vibrant. I've been involved at Chelsea and Westminster for over 7 years, and we've always had a big innovation focus at the organisation. However, obviously, over the course of the last 4 years, we've seen a real acceleration in a lot of different areas, both across the life sciences sector and in digital health, which is a real area of focus for us. So I think there's been a huge kind of flourishing of entrepreneurship. I think often in times of stress and challenge, health systems really kind of start thinking a lot more laterally. And I think that's what our patients and our staff expect. So I think why do we need innovation in the NHS? Well, from our local point of view, we always think about innovation being the key to unlocking kind of improved care and outcomes, to unlocking kind of an improved experience for our patients and our service users, and also for improving the way that we run our services and, you know, driving efficiency through that. And I think, again, you know, there's been an awful lot of progress in terms of how we can support staff and companies to really kind of get to the front line and start having that impact. So I think we've got a much greater and more kind of joined up infrastructure in the UK at the moment. And ultimately, you know, innovation is going to be critical to how we continue to evolve our services, both across the whole NHS, you know, looking at a move away from, you know, some of the challenges that we have at the moment, which are very much focused on, you know, kind of recovering post-pandemic and providing treatment for people. I think moving then into a more national model that focuses on prevention and wellness outside of the clinical setting, if we can get that.
Brilliant. Thank you, Chris. It's going to be good for patients, good for staff, and of course, good for efficiency, you mentioned as well, when we've got such increasing demand all the time on our healthcare systems. Chris Wright, could you give an overview of the system of innovation where you are in Scotland, and whether the Scottish model is different across the country, or what approach do you take to innovation in Scotland?
Yeah, I mean, I think firstly, in Scotland, it's a rapidly developing area, innovation, and I think it's really been recognised as a national priority across many of our healthcare partners. I think what's key about this is not just the development of innovation, but it's bringing innovation into service and making it, as the other Chris said, available at frontline services. And how we've tried to do this in Scotland is really by encouraging not just the rapid development of innovation, such as digital products, for example, through innovation accelerators, which will take a product from concept to minimal viable product in a very short period of time, but also then by providing testing environments. So we have a number of test beds in Scotland, which allow us to apply innovations into health and care settings, which then gives us the ability to really test whatever the innovation will be in live settings and really do the learning round about that. I think then what's been key, particularly in Scotland, and I think this is similar across other parts of the UK, is the ability to bring those innovations into more mainstream and more upscaled services. And I think that's been really achieved by going through a very specific process where you go through almost like a test and learn phase with the products or with the innovation. You do the learning with the clinical staff, the care staff, and with the organisations and partners. And then what you're doing is then you're looking at driving that into almost like a process-driven, upscaled implementation. This is all really underpinned by...
You've managed to do this across the whole country. This is very
important. We have, yes.
Can you describe very briefly what it is?
Well, effectively, it's about, first of all, identifying the right level of need. So what do we genuinely need?
This is mental health we're talking about. Sorry.
Yeah, mental health actually is across a whole range of different areas in Scotland. But mental health specifically, what we've done is we've identified areas where there's specific needs. Access to services, for example, being one of those kind of crucial requirements in Scotland because of our dispersed populations. And I think what we've been able to do is really take a national approach, but it's about the creation of national and local partnerships effectively. So we drive implementation through national expertise and through national prioritisation, as well as models around national funding and a whole range of other things. And what we've been able to do effectively is look at how we drive technology through that test and learn phase. We develop the models, we develop the risk protocols and everything else you need to deploy technology within mental health settings and wider. And then we've moved it into a very process-driven implementation approach where the aim is to be as ambitious as possible. And
what about the clinicians? Have you got clinicians and other staff on board to this? Because this is imposing something nationally can be quite difficult.
I think there's lots of collaboration working on this, but I think there's also a lot of evaluation, lots of evidence being generated. We have a very specific assessment process, so we're only looking at evidence-based applications or evidence-based technology. For example, we have to really make sure that we're engaging with our clinicians and our care workers to ensure that they understand what digital is doing within the healthcare setting. So it's about really defining the expectations of what digital can and can't do, and really just slowly building up that level of acceptance through continuous engagement. And I think it's not a short process. We've been doing this for about 20 years now. We've reached a very good level of acceptance in Scotland, which means we can introduce new technologies. But what we've really done is develop the infrastructure and make sure the infrastructure of deployment is there, as well as the infrastructure of engagement and communication. And ultimately, what we're trying to do is create a cultural change in the healthcare setting, which takes time, but is really worth the effort if you get it right.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you. That's really good to see that. Yes, it takes time, as you say. You have to build up the acceptance and the evidence. Kristin Ann, if I can turn to you now, why do you think innovation is so important in healthcare, and what would you say are the benefits? And perhaps you can give us an example or two in Cambridge.
Yes, well, I think very similar to what Chris was saying earlier, with the pressures on our healthcare system, and healthcare systems globally are well known and spoken about, aging, increasing stresses of modern day life, living longer. And actually, it's not just a question of money. We can throw a lot of money at the health system, but actually we won't have the workforce. We won't have the people trained. So actually innovating how we deliver care and making sure also that our patients and citizens have access to the latest innovations and the best outcomes is incredibly important. And actually picking up on your point earlier about clinicians, in Cambridge, we see it as a really important actually way to attract talent. Clinicians want to work in places where they can put ideas into practice and where they are able to deploy test and latest advances. So actually, we see it as a win-win in terms of attracting great talent into our organisations. And I think it's particularly important for the NHS because actually we are on the global scale, quite a small market. And actually, if we want access to the latest drugs, AI devices, imaging machines to come to this country, then we have to be part of the development journey for those companies, because otherwise they will go to other markets first. And we have, if we've helped on that development journey, we can shape it for the outcomes the NHS needs, get access early. So it's really important that we're not just adopting proven innovations, but we're a partner to people wanting to develop innovations with us.
And you have that in Cambridge, of course. You have the Cambridge Biomedical Campus, don't you, where you bring together all those different elements, including the early stage of discovery and research.
Exactly. So if we think about the biomedical campus, is quite a unique location where you've now got co-located universities, hospitals, industrial research in the form of AstraZeneca and Abcam and GSK, but also other research institutions like the Laboratory of Molecular Biology, Cancer Research UK. And you do therefore see that whole journey from basic science to application, you know, whether that was IVF, transplant. More recently, some of you might have seen Microsoft's deployment of AI in radiology programming with the hospital. And it's a fabulous.
What does it do for Cambridge? What does it do for the NHS in Cambridge, and for the patients and for the staff and for the institutions?
Well, I think it's what it does for people locally, but it's also what it does for people in other places. So it does probably locally, patients have very good outcomes in Cambridge. You, for example, if you are a woman here with breast cancer, you will get a whole genome sequence currently because of the research that's happening, which can influence the outcome of your care in a positive way. So patients get access to treatment earlier. We have a lot, we are able to attract clinicians and scientists who want to work at that interface, whether it's developing AI technologies, or I was talking to someone today who's doing a new printable device, for example, so we attract the talent. And then more broadly for the city, we have over 470 small startups in the life science space, and that leads obviously to economic growth and prosperity. And we do know that one of the biggest important things for health is actually economics. So we unashamedly say that improving health and also growing economic benefit go hand in hand.
So, I mean, this is great, but what about these busy hospitals, the busy universities? You know, have they got time for this? Do you find it innovation is something that the day-to-day operators are, if I can call them that, are able to focus on?
I think they'd always like to be able to do more, and I wouldn't like to say there's not attention there. But when it's, as Chris said, getting the prioritisation right and attracting working on innovations that they can see will help with that daily pressure and stress. You know, if they're not interested in it, it's not going to help them change their thing. They're not going to work on it. I think while innovation's always been significant, we've invested in NHRs and BRCs, it has sometimes been a little bit on the side. I think that COVID has actually provided a real change of direction, I think, to the NHS on this, because actually it has renewed the importance of innovation in the model. We saw that we were able to run large trials in this country, looking at the treatments that nobody else in the world was able to run. We were able to help support the development of the vaccine. We got virtual wards going because you couldn't keep people in hospital. GP appointments from one day to the next switched to Zoom online, and the use of digital became routine in a way that it hasn't. And so actually there's a real emphasis about not losing that, and how can we learn from that experience and what we were able to do during that time, and we'll see all real benefits from and keep that going.
So it's good to see there's a silver lining to COVID then. But I mean, what do we need to do to get better at adopting innovations that come through your system?
I think it is about matching, as Chris says, the need to the innovation. So you see a lot of innovation sort of searching for a home sometimes, and I see Chris nodding on that one. So really thinking about what the needs are and thinking that prioritization up front. There's obviously a little bit around regulation and health technology assessment, which MHA and NICE are working very closely on to create smoother pathways for technologies to go. Within the NHS itself, I think it is about increasing the capacity within providers to innovate. A lot of innovation, we've got people here, sits on the outside of hospitals or primary care practices. So how do we develop that capacity within us to absorb innovation, test it, and allow them also to innovate on the job? Data is a large part of that, leading on the secure data environment for the East of England, because having access actually to data so that you can see what's happening, do the tests, follow up, make sure that what the impact you're having is an important part of it. But bottom line, as again, it's been touched on, it comes down to culture and the value we place on innovation and the communication both to patients and staff about why it's important. And if it is embedded as important, then the time will be made.
Innovation culture. Absolutely right. Thank you.
And lack of risk. I'm going to put one more thing in. I'm sorry. Okay. Risk aversion. I think that's a real thing. There's a huge risk aversion in many healthcare systems to think, well, what's the risk of doing this, as opposed to what's the risk of doing nothing?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. You mentioned the regulation. So I'm going to turn to some of the others now about to talk about this. We've got our four main regulatory, you mentioned some of them there, agencies in the UK. And we also have, you know, we're meant to be helping innovations come into the NHS. We have a dedicated NHS innovation website now where companies can say, we've got a fantastic offer to make to the NHS, and they can be assessed for that. Chris Wright, have you seen changes in regulation and how it works? And is it a problem, or is it something we're getting better at to make innovation more easy to adopt?
I think there's definitely been changes, and I think positive changes. I think in my area across digital, there's been lots of really positive regulations coming in. I think medical device regulation has really been tightened up. Obviously, things like the inclusion of software in medical device regulation has really changed our landscape a lot. Things like, you know, classic GDPR around data and information governance is really, really important, because it is quite a clear set of guidance. So it gives us quite a clear understanding of what we require to do. But I think, you know, kind of more recently, things like cybersecurity is really coming in now. You know, companies have to be very strong in terms of their cybersecurity activity and really being able to prove that there are secure systems out there. I think what's probably been more crucial, though, is a recognition of the difficulty that actually our industrial partners or suppliers have in completing some of this regulation, and actually beginning to provide more support and advice for those suppliers that are trying to bring in products or innovations into the healthcare system. And I think that's really, really crucial. I think, again, it's this idea of creating closer collaborations, providing more guidance to industry across the kind of full field of different healthcare providers. But I think ultimately the regulations we're bringing in are creating a wee bit more clarity. I think things like NICE, clinical guidance, are really working very hard to develop not just technical guidance, but actually evidence, guidance around evidence in terms of what is proving to be effective, what's not proving to be effective, and different tiered systems to assess different types of technology. So I think the regulation can only be a good thing as long as it's clear what the requirements actually are, ultimately, and what the implications are.
Quicker, and I think we found that again back to COVID. I think the MHRA found quicker ways of approving certain medicines, etc. Chris Cheney, what's your view on this in the challenge of regulation?
So I think I'd agree with Chris in terms of, I think there's a lot of, I think the regulatory work that's happened in recent years has actually been a real benefit. I mean, I think it helps people streamline the process and helps people understand on both sides of the fence exactly what needs to be done. And certainly it's something that we've tried to develop at a local level when companies are wanting to come and work with us at the NHS acute frontline, is supporting those companies and offering advice and guidance to make sure that they are able to navigate both our internal processes and those national regulatory processes to try and make sure that good products are getting to the patient frontline and the bedside as quickly as they can. I think one of the areas that is under development at the moment that might be worth touching on is I think we do a lot of work in digital innovation, like Chris and his team. And I think the kind of rapid advancement of machine learning and AI being deployed in healthcare now is a really interesting space for regulation. So I think one of the things that we'll see over the next 12 to 18 months, and something that I think probably all of us are involved in at some level, is really a kind of tightening and a streamlining of that process of making sure that we're getting those kinds of tools that can be transformative to the way that we provide care through the system more effectively. At the moment, I think we're good at getting things tested and evaluated. We're good in the research setting, and we're good in the kind of pilot phase using a lot of AI and machine learning. But if we can get that into the business as usual phase, I think that's going to be a real leap forward. And that's something that I think we're all going to be working hard on over the next 12 months.
Great. Thanks, Chris. Well, a few quick fire questions to end really with. So a question for all of you, starting with Chris and Anne, perhaps. What's your favourite innovation that you've seen over the last year?
Favourite innovation? I'm going to pick a really small one, actually, but it shows where innovation can come and the value of GoLead staff, which was something that came out of one of the clinicians at a Royal Papworth Hospital near us, which was, we have so many apps to report.
The heart hospital, isn't it?
It's a heart and lung hospital. We have so many apps to report incidents and bad things that happen in safety reporting. And they said, we need to be, it's called Laudit. We need to actually allow patients to celebrate wonderful acts of kindness and exemplary care. So you've now got a system where, whether you're a patient or you're a staff member, you can not just raise an incident as such, but raise an incident of positivity and praise and highlight good practice, which I think is a really nice example of innovation. And that's now turned into a product, rolled out at several trusts, and you start to collect positive stories rather than just negative.
Brilliant. Thank you. Chris, right.
Yeah, I mean, in the digital space, there's so many really, I was going to say the word cool, it makes me sound really old, but very cool technologies are coming through. Things like facial recognition, you know, it looks amazing if we can get that right. Obviously, AI has got lots of applications. An old gamer, so I love gamification. I think the ability to integrate mental health into kind of mainstream games, for example. I used to play a lot of role-playing games, and you're taught how to feed yourself, and you're taught that you need sleep in these games, but you're not taught about how to manage your mental health. So you can imagine the day where gamification, you know, and mental health is integrated into games, and you're looking after your anxiety levels and your depression levels and various other things is as equal to the physical part. So gamification is definitely my thing. I like that.
That's brilliant. I remember we used to say that about soap operas. Maybe we still do, but gaming is a great area to focus on. Chris Cheney, what's your favourite innovation?
I think I'll pick something local that we've seen kind of come to fruition over the last year, and it kind of touches on what I was just mentioning around kind of the AI side of things. We have helped kind of design and develop, working with a company called Skin Analytics, an AI-assisted teledermatology service at Chelsea and Westminster. I think our skin cancer pathway in England is, I think, sees one fifth of urgent cancer referrals come through there. So it's a hugely busy pathway, and it's so in terms of the elective recovery program that we're all involved in and trying to support cancer patients faster. This is an area that we really wanted to focus on. What we've managed to do is kind of get this, you know, an AI-assisted clinical service up and running. And the early phase results look incredibly promising. In essence, it means that up to nearly 40% of patients don't need to come into hospital through that urgent pathway, which is massively beneficial to us, but also massively beneficial to them. And it speeds the process up sevenfold is what we're starting to see. So in terms of actually being able to, you know, something that we were talking about 3 years ago, how can we integrate AI? How can we use AI to support our clinical decision making? How can we use all of these tools to really improve the way we provide care and really speed things up? That's a case study that we've managed to get up and running and actually see all that come to fruition. So that's probably my favorite over the last 12 months.
Brilliant. Thank you. I'm going to stay with you, Chris, about just talk a bit about who these innovators are. You know, how do we encourage innovators and entrepreneurs to thrive in an NHS setting, which is, after all, a big public hospital system, healthcare system?
It's a great question. I think that I'm a great believer that if you go into any hospital in the world, you will find a cluster of people who are the ideas people. And they're often the guys who are there kind of challenging the status quo. They're probably a mixture of kind of some of the most senior clinical academics you have, all the way through to, you know, junior doctors, to your nursing teams. And I think, how do we try and encourage this? I think increasingly over the last few years, we've made, I think, funding has increased. So there's more access to funding if you've got good ideas. But I think also from, Chris mentioned the culture piece at a local level, I think a lot of organizations are now starting to think, how can we use this? How can we kind of cultivate this talent, cultivate this spirit of entrepreneurship and focus it on helping us solve our local challenges? So actually it's kind of really looking under our nose and supporting the people who've got great solutions to actually the local problems. And I think we're starting to see more of that. So at Chelsea and Westminster, we're part of a network of 10 organizations that work on something called the Insights Group. The Insights Group is part of the National Clinical Entrepreneurs Program. So that's kind of a twofold scheme. One is, we've got this huge cadre of clinical entrepreneurs. I think over 900 now in the UK have been through that.
Over 1,000, apparently.
Over 1,000, even more. So incredible talent, loads of brilliant ideas. But what we're also trying to do on the flip side of that is create a kind of safe landing zone where you can test and evaluate things. And similar to what Chris is doing in Scotland, actually be able to move around, hopefully as seamlessly as possible, those great ideas between different NHS organisations in different parts of the country. So the entrepreneurial space in terms of from funding to accelerator programmes to advice and guidance that you can get, to local providers starting to invest in some of this infrastructure at a regional or a local level, or indeed at a national level, is really coming together very nicely. And I think that's also, we're starting to see, a lot of companies flourish both within the UK now, but then also be able to step out of UK borders and start to take what they've learned and that kind of the maturation that they've done in the NHS setting overseas as well. And I think there's some really good case studies of that over the last 12 months or so.
Have you found, perhaps any of you, have you found any of these innovators working beyond the UK, working internationally? Chris, Cheney, do you want to start?
So certainly, I could just off the top of my head, there's probably two companies that we've done a lot of work with who are really flourishing over in the States. So, one is a wellness platform and company called Peppy. So Peppy started life, I think, as a women's health company. We met Peppy through a partnership we have with a program called the Pitch Fest, Digital Health Rewired Pitch Fest, which is a national kind of innovation competition. And if you win, you get the chance to come and work with us. So Peppy were a brilliant company. They did a great job. And they came and started working with our nursing workforce, actually providing fantastic kind of menopause support service digitally. And now I know that they've branched out into the US and are going great guns there. Another good example would be a company that we've got a very big maternity service at Chelsea. So we're always looking to think about how we can streamline that. And some of our clinicians work with a company called Lumion that came through the Digital Health London Accelerator Program, of which we're a founding partner, to help increase and the efficiency of postnatal discharge. So actually getting mums home fast, mum and baby home faster and more effectively. And again, we developed a really good platform here at Chelsea and Westminster, and Lumion have gone on to work very closely with a number of hospitals in the US and I think in the Gulf as well. So again, if we can provide that kind of test and evaluation platform in the NHS, it really does help these companies. And I always think it's a partnership. It's a win for us because it helps us. Yeah. If we're prepared to invest that time in that co-design piece, it helps us improve the care and the service that we want to offer. It's a real benefit to the companies as well and to the entrepreneurs who are demonstrating that they've got a product that works in situ.
We have got a real, really good base, haven't we, on which to test new approaches. Chris, right, please, if you have got an example of any of your digital mental health services going international, that'd be useful, but also, What advice would you give to people in other countries about how to develop this innovation? I'm sure lots of other countries are doing so, but what's your experience and what advice would you give to other countries?
I mean, I think that firstly, in relation to innovators going international, I think it actually happens a lot now, as Chris, the other Chris indicated. I think actually working in healthcare gives companies a really good foundation of evidence, evaluation, but also understanding of how you integrate technologies and innovations into healthcare settings. So we have quite a lot of our national suppliers now beginning to progress, and a lot of our local companies now begin to progress into firstly the UK market and then into the EU market and then places like America and Australia. So there's a large number of examples I think we could give around about that. I think in terms of how you're taking this forward almost at a national level, I think there's probably three or four things I would say you need to get right to start. I think the first thing is you have to understand what you need to achieve or what the objective of what you're trying to achieve is. And I think that's really important. It's not based on technology. It's not based on innovation, but it's actually based on the system and based on the healthcare settings. I think you have to be really ambitious. I think that the reality is we have a slight pilot culture across a lot of our healthcare systems. And ultimately, you have to have a route into large-scale deployment, because otherwise you can do as many pilots as you want, but you won't really have any genuine impact ultimately. So the part of that then is about developing the environment, the infrastructure, or the ecosystem, whatever you want to call it, which then genuinely enables technology to come through the system, but get to a stage where it actually is genuinely used at a national level. It's used as a large scale. And in Scotland, for example, we digital therapies as part of our core delivery. Digital therapies now account for about a third of our psychology service. So we now have digital relatively equal to more traditional approaches to service delivery. So I think it's really key that you are ambitious, you understand your objectives, you build the right ecosystem. And as has been said many times before, you have to work in acceptance. You have to generate the clinical acceptance, the public acceptance of digital within health and care settings. And as the other Chris indicated, I think it's really important that you're encouraging innovation, encouraging ideas, and giving people routes to actually make these ideas a reality.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, that's all we've got time for. And I think we've had a really interesting conversation. So thank you so much for joining us from Chelsea and Westminster, from Cambridge and from Scotland. I think we've really explored how the innovation ecosystem works in the NHS and why it's so important. There'll be more opportunities to learn about NHS innovation at the World Hospital Congress in Lisbon next month. And we look forward to meeting you there, and not only NHS innovations, but innovations from other countries too. So that should be a really great event. We're looking forward to. Please do join us for our next episode of the podcast, which is about how we take individual ideas and research pilots and how we then spread them into the NHS. So I'd just like to offer you the chance to say goodbye and thank you very much, Christine Anne.
Thank you. Come and test your innovations in the UK and start to use some of the things that we're piloting. Look forward to keeping the conversation going.
Thank you. Chris Cheney.
Thank you very much indeed. Have a great time in Lisbon. I'm sorry I can't be there in person. And absolutely, we're a great place to come and try new things. So we're always on the lookout for great ideas.
Thank you, Chris Wright.
So yeah, thanks very much for the opportunity to talk today. I will be in Lisbon. So if you want to come and see me, I will be presenting at one of the workshop sessions. So feel free to come and find me and ask me any questions you need to.
Excellent. I'll just hand over then to Eleanor for closing remarks. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode and are looking forward to hearing more. In the next episode of this three-part series, we'll be discussing pilot testing and the implementation of innovations in the NHS. Please join us then. Healthcare UK, part of the Department for Business and Trade, are running the symposium Bridging the Mental Healthcare Gap, Lessons for Hospital and Healthcare Leaders, and the roundtable discussion How Innovations in Early Diagnostics and Intervention Solutions are being implemented into the NHS and improving the efficiency of cancer care in the UK at the World Hospital Congress. For more information, visit www.worldhospitalcongress.org. Goodbye!